Welcome to the podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. Our podcast weaves together the message and a taste of the music that we experience each Sunday morning as we root our lives in grace through worship here at The Table. More and more people are finding their way to The Table through this podcast, so if you are one of the many, many folks who tune in each week from other parts of California, other parts of our country, or even from other places in the world, we would invite you to take a next step in growing in faith here at The Table. You can do that online at our website, thetableumc.org. There you'll find links to social media and also a way to make a deep commitment to our community to express how you hope to root your life in grace, to grow in faith, to reach in love, and to give generously. If you're one of the many people listening to this but haven't quite walked through the door of the sanctuary yet on a Sunday morning, we would love to welcome you into the beauty of this sanctuary. We gather each Sunday for worship at 9:30 and at 11. Our address is 5265 H Street in East Sacramento.
Hallowed, hallowed be thy name.
Our scripture reading today is from John chapter 17, verses 20 to 26. I ask not only on behalf of these, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may be one. As you, Father, are in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, that they may become completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and I have loved them even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am, to see my glory, which you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world does not know you, but I know you. And these know that you have sent me. I made your name known to them, and I will make it known so that the love with which you have loved me may be in them, and I in them.
Today, while it rained, I washed the jars. Then I lit a flame, set the water to stir. And at the end of the day, lined up to cool and seal 12 pints of spiced peach jam, 20 jars of dill beans canned from an old recipe that my mother gave to me, because it's good to put a little bit by for when the late snows fly, all that love so neatly canned by the work of our hands.
Come to the close of our worship series, Tasting Resurrection, this morning. We have traveled over these weeks from Italy all the way out to Patagonia, to the east coast of the United States, down to New Zealand, back into Los Angeles, and today we're going to Sweden. And someone said after the first worship service that the videos are kind of dark. And I realized it's dark in Sweden most of the time. We've been spending time with the stories of a Netflix documentary called Chef's Table. And we've learned, I hope, along the way that what unifies these chefs is their love of food, their love of feeding people, and that they have taken time to search for the authentic voice within each of them. This week we also come to the end of our readings from the Gospel of John with this final prayer from Jesus as he prepares his disciples for his leave-taking. We've been saying that to read from the Gospel of John after Easter, you exhaust after the first 2 weeks, references to the resurrection. And the readings take us all the way back to the last week of his life. And that's where we are with the Last Supper and a prayer at the end. And Jesus, I think, is preparing his disciples. Each disciple is unique. And the way that they are going to know God is going to be unique as well. But what unifies them, I think, is their love of Jesus and for Jesus, feeding people, and the search for their also own authentic way to follow Jesus. We learned over these weeks that each chef came to a point in his or her life in which they made a decision to rethink in some way or fashion the ingredients of their success, and then to make a choice on how, or in one case even whether or not, they wanted to move forward or to even still cook. To do that kind of rethinking takes a lot of courage. A deep amount of courage. Finding one's way in Christian community also takes no small amount of courage. And in Jesus' prayer, we heard Lori read, it's that those who follow him might have that courage to find their way, I think. And that they might follow him in the way he found his way into the heart of God. His prayer also lifts up something else. It lifts up Jesus' hope for unity among his believers. And it's a unity that is found in mutual and reciprocal loving that they have witnessed as a community so far in the life of Jesus. You know, we've talked a lot about love in this series. And we heard Matt remind us a few weeks ago that Jesus preaches a kind of love that can be offered and practiced. It's a love that unsettles the power structures by caring for those that are on the outside edges, the forgotten, the lost, caring for those that are on the bottom of the power structures. It's a unifying love. And I think it's fair to say that Christian communities often experience difficulty at staying in this kind of unifying love with each other. Actually, it may also be true to say that our difficulties as Christian communities, like churches, in staying in love with each other are often actually mirrored in the difficulties that we individuals have in getting along with each other. In other words, if we can't get along in our families, in our workplace, in our communities, in our schools, our neighborhoods, how would we expect it to be different in our churches, right? So in thinking about this week and preparing for this message, I reviewed a book that I hadn't read for a while by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. It's a book called Life Together. He has this chapter on community. And if I understand him correctly, which might not be true, but if I understand him, Bonhoeffer is saying that Christian community, as we often tend to imagine it, he calls it our wish dream. That the harmony we often imagine is not all that likely, or actually perhaps not even possible. In fact, Bonhoeffer says, you and I don't really even have a right or a reason to be disillusioned when Christian community doesn't meet our personal expectations. For it is somehow in our very experience of our communities not meeting our hopes and dreams that we actually end up discovering what it means to live life together. Not because we necessarily like each other or always agree with one another, but because of the ways in which all of our struggle with each other enables us to see more clearly and to be all the more grateful for the ways in which Christ shows us how to love each other. So with all our challenges in watching over each other in love, the intricacies of relationships and loving, this is where God put us to try and work that out. This is where God put us to try and learn from each other and to grow. So he would have us believe, Bonhoeffer, that in our differences and in our struggles, that the glory of which Jesus speaks in John 17, and Matt focused on that a few weeks ago, in our struggles is where that glory is experienced. That glory is not, you know, a triumphal finger pointing, you are wrong and I am right. That's not where glory is. Glory is in forgiveness. Oh. Glory is experienced not from gossip about others, but among those who can examine our own faults. Take time to think, how am I doing good in this life I have? Where am I about to do harm? Or where did I do some harm in my relationship? And recognize our need for God. That's why we talk every week about trying to stay in love with God. How do we do that? Hopefully that's where our struggles take us, in those places. I want to share with you Bonhoeffer's actual words about community. This is how he wrote it. He said, innumerable times a whole Christian community has broken down because it had sprung from a wish dream. The serious Christian sat down for the very first time in a Christian community, that happens here a lot, is likely to bring with him or her a very definite idea of what Christian life together should be and try to realize it. But God's grace speedily shatters such dreams. Just as surely as God desires to lead us to a knowledge of genuine Christian fellowship, so surely must we be overwhelmed by a great disillusionment with others, with Christians in general, and if we are very fortunate, with ourselves. So, I've spent a great deal of my past ministry working to resolve church conflicts and intentionally forming a new church community along with all of you with a goal towards following Jesus with transparency, trust, kindness, and lack of conflict. So maybe I'm naive, and I think that I am, and I'm going to call on Katie. You don't have to speak, but Katie's the one at Spezi Alley who helped us birth all of our kitchen tables, who teaches us that conflict is a stage of relationship, and I know she's smart and right. Even Dietrich Bonhoeffer agrees with you, but it's hard. But I think they're on to something. But I don't really like to admit it to you. That's what I learned this week. Because it makes me think that they're saying that in our differences and in our bumping up against each other, in our struggles, in our pain and suffering and hurt, that is precisely when we stumble into and receive God's grace. So it's through some amount of conflict that we actually receive insight into loving others and ultimately into our own need for being loved and loving God. It seems like Jesus is expecting a lot. He wants us to be one, is what this says. How can the followers of Jesus expect to ever truly be one, given the diversity of our religious experiences? Heck, just given the diversity of one pew in this church, right? One pew. Maybe the purpose then of Jesus' prayer is unity not for its own sake, but for the sake of witnessing to the love of God and the authenticity of Christ as the one God sent to teach us how to love. Maybe it's a prayer needed as much in the divided and fragmented world that we currently live in and in the Christianity that we try to practice now as in those ancient churches that Jesus was speaking to. How is this unity supposed to be achieved? You know, if our chefs are to be believed that we have been studying, this unity is in part to be achieved by making the most of what you have to create an experience that actually makes sense. You know, every year we invite our community here at the table to make deep commitments. And these deep commitments ask us, how do you want to root your life in grace, grow in faith, and reach in love? And how do you want to give generously of your financial resources? And these deep commitments become the ingredients, you see, of our Christian community, of our worship series. These ingredients from the deep commitments are the inspiration for so many of us to be able to reach in love. They're the ingredients and the ways in which we know that folks are going to share in their kitchen tables every week. All of these practices create a community of love and trust, which I think bends towards unity and the unity Jesus is talking about. He's not talking about uniformity. That's different. He's talking about unity. Which brings me back to our chefs, because they keep showing us week after week how they have created unity, some of them in their kitchens, some of them in their families, some of them in their communities, some of them just simply on the plate. And this week we're going to meet a chef, Magnus Nilsson from Sweden. Yeah, it's very cold there. He's got bacon and some other thing, meat-like, hanging. They just hang in his restaurant, you'll see. His restaurant is called Faviken. And as our other chefs were, Nilsson was trained, classically trained in France, before he returned to his home of Sweden. Faviken is ranked in the top 50 restaurants in the world. But if you plan to go there, you better plan ahead because it might not be open when you get there. And I'm going to say more about that in a little bit. But before I do, I want us to first listen. You're going to listen to Chef Nilsson's own voice. Some of it's a little hard to hear. As I said, it's dark because it's dark. I think that's a filmmaker's choice. But he's going to share in his own words his understandings of the creative process. This is a little longer than the videos we've seen in the past, but I offer it to all of us.
I've never decided what kind of cooking I'm going to do. I've always just done what I felt made sense right there and then. And I've let my style of cooking develop depending on where I worked. My name is Magnus Nilsson. I am the restaurateur and chef at Faviken Magasinet. The most important thing for any chef is to make the most out of whatever you have around you. Doesn't matter if it's in the countryside like mine or if it's in a city, you just have to make the most of whatever you have. Because that's the only way of creating an experience that makes sense. For many Swedes, like being in nature is just part of everyday life. It's just something that a lot of people do to go out in the forest, for example, to pick mushrooms in autumn or berries or whatever it might be. So it, to me, is just part of who I am, and it's nothing I really think about, but it makes sense to include it in what we produce at Fabiken. Now we're in late autumn, we're almost in winter, there's not a lot of foraging going on, and like most of the leaves, they've gone into winter dormancy and they've died away. So what we pick this time of year is spruce or pine needles or juniper and things that have flavor and aroma all through the year. To cook over a fire is something that's really special because it's something that not only cooks the product as such, it also seasons it. Done by someone who's really skilled is one of the most fantastic ways of cooking. So this recipe is really simple, and it would be something that you would probably do, you know, as a lunch if you were out on a day of hunting for grouse in the Swedish mountains. So I'll take the fillets off the carcass of the bird, seasoning them with a little bit of salt, and just place those in the pan together with the leg. I let the pieces of bird just brown very lightly in a little bit of butter. Then as they cook and rest in the pan, the smoke from the fire will come up and season the meat itself. To finish, I'll just add a little bit of spruce needles to the pan, to the hot sizzling butter. As a creative person, you will always reflect yourself. Everything that you've ever experienced and everything that you've ever seen, it will somehow reflect into what you make. You know, growing up, spending a lot of time out in the forest, it's obviously something that shaped a lot of the ways that I work with food today.
He said, as a creative person, you will always reflect yourself. Everything you have ever experienced and everything that you've ever seen, it will somehow reflect into what you make. When Jesus prayed for his followers, maybe this was a little bit of what he was understanding. For when our lives reflect all that we have experienced, it means all that we've experienced, not just the good parts, not just the parts of us that long for unity, but also the quarrelsomeness of us. Was Jesus maybe suggesting that the quarrelsomeness of his disciples might cause others to think as they looked on, Jesus couldn't have been that great and peaceful and good of a leader if you look at these guys? Maybe he was worried about that. Maybe. See, I don't believe, though, that Jesus was making a play for doctrinal unity or organizational rigidity or even political unity, even though this prayer has been used over the ages to say that that's what Jesus was doing. I don't believe that's true. I believe this prayer grows out of his understanding and in his relationship with the actual human beings with him around that table, that unity proceeds from the heart and love of God that is received and shared person to person, heart to heart, one at a time around. Sadly, though, it might be true that in the ancient world and in our world today, our very prayer for unity among Christians, as he's trying to be helpful to pray, has the absolute most power to divide us. The very act of placing a rainbow flag, for example, outside on our lawn, sends the message to some people that they may not feel very comfortable in this place, right? The fact that last week our 9:30 worship service, it was not planned in any way, but at our communion table at 9:30 was presided over only by women. And someone took a picture and asked me to post it on Facebook. In all of our years together, in 5 years, That is the most circulation of any Facebook post we have ever gotten. All women presiding at a communion table. Oh, I didn't mean that. What I want to say, the reason I'm saying it is, that's what we have to offer. That's our experience. The rainbow flag, women in leadership, those are just two of the ingredients we have to communicate the message of God's love for all people. Everyone else has more ingredients. See, when you think of all the restaurants we have featured over these weeks, one thing you have and maybe learned is that the main ingredient that they have to offer is something really simple. It's to be open. I mean, in business, as restaurateurs, to serve the people who will eat at their tables, they have to be open to the eater. And something very unique about Magnus Nilsson's Michelin-starred restaurant, as I said, Favicon, is this. That he and his whole staff are going to close the restaurant for a spell. 20 weeks. This is a new practice that they're putting in place this year. They're going to close Favicon for 20 weeks each year so that all of them, chef and all staff, and they'll be paid for that whole time, would have time to explore other creative projects that will bring them back to help create new and more unique experience for their customers. And here's just a list of some of the things that they're going to go and explore and study. The color blue in nature. I love this. A monastery and the life there in Finland. A Japanese mushroom garden, lupin beans and the use of their proteins, traditional and modern methods for extended storage of eggs, and the use of growing beds heated with compost in a greenhouse. Right? What a range. Unity, not uniformity. Magnus says of this closure time, I'm really looking forward to see what the result is of these 20 weeks of creative work. And at the moment, I don't know what it will be, but I'm sure it's going to be interesting. That's his root cellar back there. The unity they seek is to create new and unique experiences for their customers, and in order to do so, there has to be some freedom to wonder. And so, of course, it made me think so much this week of this study leave, that it's not just myself and Matt, it's all of us. That in order for us to create a new and unique resource for our community, we have to be freed from some of our daily ministry tasks so that we can explore. And we're taking, I hope, all of us, what we have, our unique experience over these last 5 years, to create and offer something new to people who have not yet even heard of us. See, Chef Nilsson says that we're called to make the most out of whatever we have. And many outsiders look on at the desolate setting of his little restaurant in rural Sweden and think he has very little to work with. If you read about him, people are shocked. Yet he celebrates the place he finds himself as a chef, and he invites his staff and community to do the same. And he's really become part of this community, and he reflects that. I'm going to show you one more really short clip, and this time we're going to get taken into his kitchen, and you will see how Favicon takes ingredients, but he's really focusing on the actual meal, the preparation, the presentation, for the word he uses, the eater. Let's watch.
The running of the kitchen, it's not the difficult part, because that's just about structure and planning. The difficult part is to be able to see when you're crossing the line with the eater, and also to be able to see when you need to push the eater. How many courses is an average tasting menu? Maybe, I don't know, 20, something like that, perhaps. That's a lot of time. That's like a full workday of eating. And for us, the first 6 or 7 little bites, they come in a very rapid succession, one every 180 seconds. So basically, when you've had a little bite, the next one just arrives. Then after a few delicious bites, it's a little bit slower. A new plated course landing on your table every 7 or 8 minutes. After a half hour, a little bit of wine, the pace will change again, and we just increase it very rapidly. And after that, you can go back to plated courses again. You're going to sit down for 2.5 hours in my restaurant. I'm going to give you 30 courses. When you control it perfectly, no one thinks about it being too quick. It's just delicious.
30 courses. When you are crossing the line with the eater, you need to think about how you need to push the eater. I think it's similar with this prayer from Jesus. Jesus intimately knows God and wants to push us to do the same. Jesus longs for us to cross lines of seeing the world as abundant instead of scarce all around us. Jesus longs to push us to love and to be unified in our efforts to love and reach all those whom God calls beloved. So if we're to take this prayer of Jesus seriously, what might that look like in our daily life? Well, we've seen what it looks like in the restaurant and with all of these chefs. But maybe here it looks a little different, not 30 courses over 2.5 hours. But maybe over the course of a morning, it looks more like volunteering to watch over our children in love. You all noticed our worship folder, and there's a little tear-off here. And there's all of these dates. Well, this is a way in which we are, as a community, trying to be unified in loving our children. We give our Sunday school Godly Play teachers a break over the summer. And for 3 months at 9:30, we ask the rest of us to step in and watch over our many beautiful children in love. Well, why do we do that? We do that because maybe the unity we're seeking is to allow children to create in space that is lovingly provided where they can actually move their bodies, have time with our beautiful musicians to learn some music, to do some art, and to not have to sit quietly, act like adults that they are not, read, which they can't, and look at screens, which they don't recognize the words yet. You know? Maybe what we're trying to do is cross the line into their world to help and to love so that we might be unified at different levels of our abilities. Or maybe it looks like something brand new that no one's ever heard of yet, and today I'm telling you for the first time, which is to change the life of a young person who is a former foster youth by becoming a mentor for them. Maybe the unity we're called to create is by partnering with another community that is seeking us out through Brenda Dabney and Tessa Taft called True North. And True North wants us to help them, help former foster youth, young mommies, young daddies, to get the support they need to have a better life for themselves and their babies. And we need team leaders that are going to be open to weekly phone calls and a monthly visit and to guiding them through systems or whatever it is, the goals they set, how to go food shopping, how to set a budget. We want to launch that later in the summer. Maybe that's what the unity we are called to seek might look like. And we're going to launch that this summer. You know, there's a famous theologian named Jürgen Moltmann. And he believes something that really unifies all of us that's right here behind me is this table. And he believed that the communion that we have offered here should always be practiced in unity and unification among Christians. It's not, but that's what he believed. And he challenged us, and this is what he wrote. He said, Jesus put no preconditions on those disciples' participation in the Last Supper. He paused the meal, broke the bread, and offered the cup, and said these words. The Lord's Supper is not the place to practice discipline of division. The Lord's Supper happens by invitation. And that invitation is as open as the outstretched arms of Jesus on the cross, which is why so many Christian sanctuaries have the cross, to remind us of that posture. He's saying, whoever wants to come to this table to take a step into unity may come to this table. Those of us who hold doubts, come to this table. It's all right. Those of us who have conflicts with each other in the church are invited to this table. Those of us who feel confused by our lives, excluded, shunned, judged, rejected, can come to this table. Those of us who just walked into the sanctuary for the very first time, those of us who have never heard of communion and don't know what to do with bread and juice, it happens here almost every week. You're welcome to come. Those of us who come all the time and everywhere in between, we also have a place at this table. See, we don't always get communion, and we separate it off from something that we don't know and live our lives. But the truth is, this is the place where we find unity. And we don't always feel welcome, and I just want to remind us that that's usually us self-selecting ourselves out. The welcome is from God. Jesus broke the bread. And the prayer that we hear this morning, as I close, is that we are all invited to take God's love to heart, to practice that love, and to share it from this place to neighbor, to neighbor, to neighbor. And in that way, we are God's unified people. Thanks be to God. Amen.
I am set free.